Okay, we're back on record on September 22nd, and it's 4:09 p.m. And we have witness Detective Herman Hall. Go ahead and swear him in.
You do solemnly swear from the testimony you're about to give the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
Yes, sir.
And would you state your name, please?
Herman Hall.
And where are you employed?
I'm employed with the Office of the Attorney General, Department of Criminal Investigations, as a detective.
And how long have you been in that position?
I started with the Attorney General's office in January of 2011. Worked Medicaid for about 2 years and then switched over to the Department of Criminal Investigations about July of 2013.
Prior to that, where did you work?
I worked for the Kentucky State Police. I started my career with Kentucky State Police January 12, 1986. My tenure with the State Police included 6 years. I worked the road as a trooper. I switched over to street level narcotics, worked street level narcotics for about 18 months. After coming off of street level narcotics, I was put into general investigations, and I got promoted in 2000, and I retired as the administrative sergeant at the Elizabeth Town Post, August the 1st of 2010.
And you worked at some other state police posts besides Elizabethtown?
Yes, ma'am.
Where else did you work?
I worked the Hazard Post. I tried to get a t-shirt from every post before I retired. So I worked the Hazard Post for a year, and then I worked Madisonville for 13 years. I worked Bowling Green for about 5 years, and then went to Records for a short period and finished my career at the Elizabethtown Post as the administrative sergeant.
Thank you. Now, did you become involved in the Attorney General's investigation of this case, the shooting death of Breonna Taylor?
Yes, ma'am.
When did you become involved?
June the 10th of this year.
And as part of the investigation, your investigation, did you conduct interviews with some of the neighbors there on Springfield Drive?
Yes, ma'am.
And do you know approximately how many neighbors you interviewed?
Oh, gosh. I don't have the exact number, but it had to be 15.
Could it have been maybe even more like 20 or?
It could have been. It could be 15 to 20. I'm just trying to use a very conservative number. Mm-hmm. I know I visited that neighborhood probably 8 to 10 times, and there were a lot of doors that we knocked on where people were not home or they just refused to talk with us.
Okay. In particular, did you interview the residents of the people who live?
Yes, ma'am.
And who were those? Were they?
That was Chelsea Napper and her boyfriend Cody Etherton.
And where did you interview them?
They were interviewed at the law office of Brandon Lawrence. It was in their attorney's office.
And were the interviews of Chelsea Napper and Cody Etherton conducted separately?
Yes, ma'am, they were.
Okay, well, let's begin with the interview of Chelsea Napper.
Okay.
And now this interview was not recorded, was it?
That's correct. It was not recorded.
So you have made a summary of what Ms. Napper said?
Yes, ma'am.
Would you go ahead and tell us what that summary of her statement is?
Sure. The interview was conducted on June the 26th at 15:25 hours this year, and it was conducted in the presence of her attorney. In June of 2020, Chelsea Napper lived in that apartment with her boyfriend Cody Edgerton, her five-year-old son, and then their infant child that was born June of 2020. In March of 2020, the infant child was not born. Chelsea was pregnant at the time. Napper and Edgerton dated about 5 years. They moved into the apartment March 2019, and she's the only name on the lease. Napper didn't know Breonna Taylor very well, but did see her in the common area once in a while. They did hang out together, and Napper believed Taylor worked third shift. Napper did see Breonna Taylor's sister often, but didn't know much about her or speak with her very often. On March the 12th of 2020, about 10 p.m. to 11 p.m., Cody and she went to bed in their bedroom as was sleeping in the other bedroom.
If you want to point to these locations as you were describing that.
You have a laser pointer? They sleep in the master bedroom, and sleeps in this first bedroom closer to the living room area. So they went to bed between 10 and 11 p.m. on March the 12th. Napper is a heavy sleeper and doesn't hear a lot after falling asleep, and Cody is a light sleeper and easier to wake. They don't sleep with any background noise or with the TV playing at nighttime, so there's no type of noise as a distraction. Sometime after midnight on March the 13th, all of a sudden there were loud noises coming from the front door area, which sounded like a door ram or gunshots, but she wasn't sure because she was startled from being awakened and the noise happened all at once. Cody and she jumped from the bed and it was like Fort Knox. After thinking about it, she said the noises that awakened them must have been a door ram because Cody was at the end of the hallway when the gunshots started. And if you want me to point that out.
Yeah.
She's indicating to this neighborhood here. It was so fast and really loud for a couple minutes. She recalled hearing gunshots but couldn't tell how many shots. It was like a huge explosion. She couldn't recall hearing any voices before the loud noises started. She was standing in the hallway near the back bedroom door, which would be the master bedroom door here. She retrieved her phone and called her grandmother, Carolyn Richards, at 12:42 a.m. Napper thought she would need, the reason she called her grandmother was she thought she would need someone. She disconnected from the call and then called 911 reporting the incident. Napper mostly stayed in the back hallway area because she was scared and she froze. She was on the phone and checked on the other bedroom, which is closer to the front door. She believes Cody opened the front door first, and she heard the police saying, and these are the words that she used, "Get the fuck back inside, shut the door." But he can tell me more about it. The sliding back door glass was broken. The police thought their apartment was the same as the apartment next door, Taylor's apartment. Cody was wearing a red pair of basketball shorts, and the police from the back of the apartment were addressing him as red basketball shorts. The police had their guns drawn and were using flashlights as well as canine. The police were ordering Cody to come outside from the back, and Cody said to her, "Call the police and tell them they have the wrong apartment," because he did not want to be shot. She didn't look out the back door, but was remembering seeing flashlights. After things calmed, she did peek out of the front door peephole occasionally. She did hear what she thought was a crying kid before discovering it was Kenneth Walker. She could hear him crying and repeatedly saying, "Help, breathe, oh my God, no." Walker was in the Taylor apartment. She did not hear any other voices, only Walker crying. At the time, they didn't know it was the police doing the shooting. Cody was looking through the front door peephole when Walker was walking backwards towards the police. There was blood in the walkway and on Cody's truck. An Asian SWAT cop came to their apartment and asked permission to take pictures of the bullet holes and damage inside their apartment. Cody and she said yes, signing a consent, giving the police permission to take the pictures. She asked the cop what was going on, where did the bullets come from, but they couldn't tell her anything. The incident went all night, so Cody and she took shifts staying awake. She believes there was a bright light on the outside of the apartment complex. She couldn't recall Brianna receiving a lot of packages before the March 13th incident. Taylor was getting some packages from Amazon and United Parcel Service after her death, and Elaine in apartment would get the packages. She again stated she didn't know if it was loud bangs or gunshots that awakened her. She acknowledged people would shoot guns in the parking lot often.
Okay.
We've got a question.
Question.
Did she say she could, or she did, or didn't know that she got packages before March 12th?
She didn't know. She couldn't recall Brianna receiving a lot of packages before March 13th.
Anything else? Okay, now, on that same day, you interviewed Cody Etherton.
Yes, ma'am. That was also done in the presence of attorney Brandon Lawrence, and that interview was conducted 1608 hours.
And so what did Cody tell you about?
He confirmed that he lived with his girlfriend, Chelsea Knapper, and their five-year-old son, and their infant baby born in June 2020. They have resided at the apartment about a year. On March the 12th of 2020, Chelsea and he went to sleep in the back bedroom. About midnight, he was awakened by loud noises at the front door. It sounded as if someone was trying to kick in their front door. Chelsea and he jumped from the bed and he said, "What the fuck was that?" Etherton started walking fast towards the end of the hallway. He couldn't remember if Chelsea followed him or stayed at the end of the bed. He was at the end of the hallway, entering the living room, but couldn't remember if that's the last time he heard the last boom or not. He believes he heard one, two, or three shots. He recalled seeing drywall dust coming from the wall and knew it was bullets. And the wall he's referencing, this dining room wall, which separates that dining area and Taylor's dining area.
And where was Cody?
I'm sorry?
Where would Cody have been when he saw the drywall dust?
He recalls coming down this hallway and the drywall dust coming from this wall. And he recalled one, two, or three shots. At one point, he said he must have lost his hearing because he can't recall how many shots were fired.
Okay, then what did he do then?
Once he saw the drywall dust coming from the wall, he knew it was bullets. He dropped down to the ground and kind of crawled back into the hallway and went back into the bedroom, telling Chelsea to get on the ground. It was loud initially, and at first, he thought it was someone kicking the front door in, but when he got to the end of the hallway is when he recalled seeing the drywall dust, but couldn't remember the number of gunshots or hearing the gunshots. He identified the gunshots by seeing the drywall dust. There was a short pause, and he couldn't remember if he was hearing gunshots at that point. He waited for a second, and everything got real silent, and then he heard, "LMPD, get on the ground," and it got really quiet for a minute. He got curious and was wondering what was going on. He thought people were partying, and they got into a fight, so he opened the front door. He saw Brianna Taylor's front door busted open, so he looked into her apartment, but it was dark, and he couldn't see anything. He walked past the stairwell and saw the police officers, and one officer saw him. The officers were yelling at Etherton to get back into his apartment. He did hear Walker from inside Taylor's apartment saying, "Baby, breathe, baby, breathe." He went back inside the apartment, closing the front door, and was walking into the living room when he could hear the glass patio door was shattered by falling broken glass.
So would you point out that?
So this back balcony, this door here, the glass was falling from it because bullets had went through that door. He walked to the patio door and pulled the door blinds back. He believes Chelsea was approaching him from the rear, but had not made it into the living room. He looked through the pool blinds and could see police officers lined up outside.
So where would the police officers he saw have been?
They would be in the yard area in this neighborhood. There's another, of course, this is a connected wall through here. Another, you know, it's an apartment building that connects. So he would see them over this yard area.
Through the patio door?
Yes, ma'am.
That was shattered?
Yes, ma'am. He pulled the blinds back, the vertical blinds, and he could see the flashlights and the police officers through that.
Okay. Go ahead.
The police kept saying, put your hands up, and wanted him to place his hands through the broken glass door. He refused to comply with placing his hands out of the door and went to the hallway telling Chelsea to call the police and tell them they were not the same apartment. Let me repeat that. Telling Chelsea to call the police and tell them they were not the same apartment. He could hear the police radio saying white male with red shorts. So Atherton was telling Chelsea to call the police and tell them they had the wrong apartment. Atherton did return to the front door and was watching through the door peephole as the police arrested Walker. There's a light in the apartment corridor, the breezeway, separating the apartments. And so he was able to see that. He estimated about 5 minutes between the shooting and the time the police took Walker from the apartment. Everton was watching Walker walk backwards towards the officers and could see Walker get on his knees at the front of a pickup truck. About 45 minutes to an hour passed before a cop of foreign descent came to their apartment. He stated that unfortunately sometimes these things happen. They gave police permission to photograph the damage to their apartment. When it happened, Everton went into survival mode and his adrenaline was pumping. He was thinking there were people outside fighting and they were trying to kick his front door in. He could not hear any voices or noises before being awakened by the loud noises that sounded as the door was being kicked in. He knows for a fact he did not hear anyone saying Louisville Metro Police Department or anything prior to being awakened. He would have felt safer if he would have heard Louisville Metro Police Department announced because he was thinking that he was being robbed. After seeing the drywall dust is when Everton got down and went back into the bedroom and told Chelsea to get down on the ground. There's probably a 15 to 20 second pause, and then he heard Louisville Metro Police Department saying, get down on the ground. There was maybe 5 minute gap between the shooting and the Louisville Metro Police Department ordering Walker out of the apartment. Everton really didn't know Breonna Taylor and Walker before the March 13th, 2020 incident. He did see Breonna's sister and her child almost daily come in and out of the Taylor apartment.
Okay, questions about the Cody Atherton interview?
Yes. Atherton said that he felt like, from the noise, he thought it was somebody trying to break in his door.
Yes, sir.
Does he say when he didn't, at what point he says he heard, because he said he didn't hear them announce the LMPD? Was this, he says this is before he heard all the, what woke him up, right?
Yes, sir.
So yeah. What woke him up was the heat when they was trying to breach the door.
The noises, I will say, that would have been an assumption on my part.
Any other questions? Okay. Did you also conduct an interview with Elaine Williams?
Yes, ma'am.
And where does she live?
She lives in.
So where would that be on our photo up there?
This is Breonna Taylor's door. This is Natter, Atherton's door, and this is Elaine's door, Elaine Williams' door.
Apartment?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. When did you interview Elaine Williams?
July 2nd, 2020, at 1407 hours.
And what did she advise?
It was a recorded interview. She has resided at the residence about 14 months and lives alone. On March 12, 2020, she was lying on her bed watching TV with the volume on medium. She usually sleeps with the TV on. She dozed off to sleep and was awakened by banging at her front door. It's hard to hear any noises from the back of her apartment where her bedroom is located. Her granddaughter lives in the next apartment building to Taylor's apartment. And she thought the banging was the granddaughter's mother dropping her off the next morning. She had her time orientation along. She thought she had overslept and it was morning. Williams babysits the granddaughter and will put her on the school bus in the mornings. She immediately got out of bed and went to the front door expecting her granddaughter to be there. She cracked the door open enough for the granddaughter to step in, but she didn't step in. At that point, she fully opened the door. It was dark, and she could smell gunpowder and what she described as gun pellets, meaning gun casings, and thought, what the hell is going on? She did hear them say, "Officer down, officer down." She did not see anyone in the apartment entry corridor, but could smell gunpowder. She ran back into her bedroom, picking up her phone, and the time was 12:45. She called her son, Elijah Williams, when her granddaughter's mother, Brianna Lowe, called her. She put Elijah on hold and answered Lowe's call. Lowe asked, "Are you okay? What's going on?" Now, Miss Lowe lives in the apartment behind Brianna Taylor's apartment, in that apartment building.
Okay.
Lowe responds, "There's police out here and they're shooting." Williams thought, okay, that's what's going on. And it was a shock. Lowe heard and knows more about the incident than Williams does. Elijah was telling Williams to go into the back master bedroom for safety because the bullets, master bathroom for safety because the bullets could come through the walls. She didn't take his advice until after the police came around the back of the apartment buildings. She did return to the front door and cracked it open. She saw Brianna Taylor's apartment door cracked open and could hear Kenneth Walker yelling and screaming for help. At that time, she didn't know a male was at the Taylor apartment and only knows two females to live in that apartment, and she didn't know they were sisters. She knew Brianna and her sister as casual neighbors. She only knows one male to live in any of the downstairs apartment, and it was next door to her apartment, in apartment 3, meaning Cody Etherton. She thought it was them, but couldn't picture in her mind why their door was open and Brianna's door was open because of the screaming. Walker was yelling for help, saying, "Baby, breathe, baby, breathe, baby." Let me start that over. Walker was yelling for help, saying, baby, breathe, please breathe. She still was thinking a male was in Taylor's. She still wasn't thinking a male was in Taylor's apartment and only knew of the male next door. Her heart was racing because the lady next door was pregnant and a little boy lives in there also. Williams thought, oh my God, something is wrong with her, she's pregnant. Williams never left her apartment and estimated hearing Walker scream for 15 minutes or more. She kept thinking the incident happened in apartment 3 instead of apartment 4. Because no man lives in apartment 4. She did not know Kenneth Walker prior to the incident. She learned his name after the incident. She added, the second time she opened the door, she heard an officer say, "Reload, reload, let's do what we need to do." The other officers in the back were saying, "Get down, get down." She stated the voices were coming from the left front of the apartment building in front of Brianna Taylor's apartment. She described being in her back bedroom when the front door closed and could hear Walker scream with the front door closed and could hear Walker screaming for help. She did not return to the front door area, and the last thing that she did hear was him saying, "Put your hands up and back up, back up." She still thought the incident happened next door and was concerned about the pregnant lady.
Okay, so she was in her bed asleep.
Yes, ma'am.
And was woken up by banging on what she thought was her door.
Yes, ma'am. She thought she had overslept and it was time for her to get her granddaughter. She thought it was morning.
And when she went to the door, she did open the door?
Yes, ma'am. She first cracked the door open enough for the granddaughter to slip in, and that the granddaughter didn't slip in, so she fully opened the door, and that's when she saw the bullet casings and could smell the gunpowder.
And is that when she heard Officer Down?
I believe she heard it the second time that she went to the door. No, it was the first time. I'm reading in her statement. It was the first time that she heard Officer Down, Officer Down. The second time is when she heard reload, reload.
Are there questions?
Did you say that the apartment 2 lady that we just talked about received some of Breonna Taylor's packages at her doorstep?
She did. She after the March the 13th incident, she would get those packages and take them into her apartment, and Breonna Taylor's mother or sister would pick them up.
But she never had before the death. But the packages probably still were coming.
I believe she says she got a couple before, you know, not you know, it wasn't. I think she said two, maybe two, before this incident occurred. And I did put that in her summary.
So another question?
Can you repeat what she said? She said reloading, reloading, what did she say after that?
Yes, ma'am. The second time that she opened the door to her apartment, she heard reload, reload, let's do what we got to do. And she also heard, get down, get down. Officers in the back were screaming, get down, get down.
So she heard the same officers that Cody Etherton heard from the back of the apartment.
I would make that assumption.
Okay. Does Williams also have a back patio like, or yeah?
Yes, ma'am, she
like
does.
Apartment 3 has, the same design.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
I believe if you flip that apartment, the Etherton and Napper apartment, a mirror image, that is going to be Lane Williams' apartment.
Any other questions?
Did she mention whether she heard get down from the front or from the back?
That would be from the front. All the noises, all the voices that she heard was from that front door position. And when she heard Mr. Walker, the front door was closed and she was in her back bedroom, but it's still coming from the front door area, that corridor, or in that.
She heard get down,
and
get down from the front door or from the back door?
No, she heard the get down when she opened the door the second time.
I thought you had said she heard Officer Down.
That was the first time.
First time, okay. All right. Any other? Yes, ma'am.
Sorry, did she specify whether she heard the police announce themselves?
She never.
She said she was
very much.
Okay. Did you obtain an interview that had been conducted with the woman who lives in apartment?
Yes, ma'am.
And who is she?
Christy Vale.
And could you point out up here in photograph where apartment is.
That door.
Okay.
No, I'm sorry.
Right.
I can't.
Is directly above the Cody Etherton and Kelsey Napper apartment.
Yes, sir, it is.
All right, now who conducted that interview with Christy Vale?
It was an FBI task force officer and a special agent with the FBI, Special Agent George, and I believe TFO Hamilton.
Okay. When was that interview conducted?
June 11, 2020.
What did Christy Vale advise during her interview?
Vale has lived in her apartment for approximately 2 years. She recalled the events of March 13, 2020, and says she was home sitting in her bedroom checking her phone when she heard what sounded like someone beating on her door. As she made her way from her bedroom to her front door, she realized it was gunshots she had heard. She believed it was nonstop and thought somewhere between 15 and 20 shots. She heard officer down and reload. She also heard a guy she later learned to be Kenny downstairs yelling for help. She tried to find a safe place and went back into her bedroom. Vale did not call 911 because cops were already at her building. Later that morning, at approximately 1:30 a.m., an officer knocked on her door and asked whether she knew of gunshots coming into her apartment. She said she never found any bullet holes in her apartment. Vale stated she fell asleep approximately 5:30 a.m. Vale said she did not take any pictures or make any videos of the incident. She stated she did not know the occupants of 3003 Springfield Drive, apartment 4. And there's another paragraph if you want me to read it. I don't think it's applicable.
No. So she was awake at the time in her bedroom?
Yes, ma'am.
When she heard also as Elaine Williams, someone thought someone was beating on her door.
Yes, ma'am.
And, but she, did she ever open her door? No?
I believe she looked through the peephole, just my recollection of the recording.
Okay. And she heard officer down also and reload.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Any questions about this interview?
Yeah, she was awake. She thought it was her door being knocked on. She never heard LM Global Police.
No, sir, she did not.
Okay. Did you obtain interviews that had been previously conducted by a couple of agencies of the man who lives in apartment in the, if you would refer up to this photograph, in the section of that building?
Yes, ma'am.
And what is his name?
Jack Schuler.
And what apartment is he?
He is apartment.
Could you point out on the park?
That's going to be this upstairs apartment, this location.
Okay, and so Mr. Schuler was first, well, actually, I think who interviewed Mr. Schuler?
A special agent Russell and Fisher.
And FBI agents. FBI agents. Mm-hmm. And when did that happen?
June 12, 2020.
What did Mr. Schuler advise the agents that he had seen and heard that night?
He's lived in the apartment complex for nearly 5 years. He lived previously above where the incident occurred 3 years ago. Schuler lives with his wife, Melissa Schuler, and 18-year-old daughter, Jacqueline Schuler. On March 13th, 2020, Schuler was in his living room watching television with the sliding glass door open. It was quiet outside when Schuler heard three quick pops that were gunshots. Schuler got up from his couch and moved towards the sliding door. As he made his way to the sliding door, there was a pause of a few seconds, followed by the sound of two more gunshots. When Schuler reached the sliding door, he moved the shades to see what was happening outside and saw a line of cars across the parking lot. The line of cars were parked such that the vehicles which were parked in the apartment parking spaces were blocked. After another brief pause, Schuler heard a third set of gunshots. Schuler described the third set of gunshots as sounding like the OK Corral and like a fully automatic gun was being fired. When Schuler looked outside, he saw people outside who were dressed in black and wearing vests. Schuler did not see anything on the attire of the people outside identifying themselves as police officers. At that point, Schuler did not know the people he saw outside were police officers. Schuler saw a man below his deck, which he now knew to be a police officer, hereinafter referred to as Officer One, who was shooting at a residence. Officer One shouted out commands to the SWAT team to bust down the gate. Schuler heard Officer One say words to the effect of, "I don't care, break the effing gate down so you can get in. I want you in so the ambulance can get in." While Officer One was shooting, he had a 9mm Glock in one of his hands and was talking on the radio in the other one. Doesn't have radio in this, but he was talking on his radio with the other one. Schuler looked out further in the parking lot and saw at least three men dressed the same way as Officer Number One. Schuler was asked to draw a sketch of the location of the apartment complex and the approximate locations of where the people he saw were located. Schuler designated on the sketch the approximate locations of the police officers by labeling their locations 1 through 4. Number one represented Officer One's location, and numbers 2 through 4 represented the locations of the remaining officers.
We have the sketch up here, which would be Exhibit 62. Can you point out where is Mr. Schuler's deck there, where he is on his deck as he drew that?
Well, I believe this is his deck.
Okay.
And there's the number one designated by his RV. Russell. And then we've got 2, 3, and 4 indicating Officer 2, 3, and 4.
I think Officer One is down there by the deck.
By the deck. I couldn't see that little. Yeah. Couldn't figure out what this was. But I believe that's correct. Yes.
And then 2, 3, and 4 are cars across.
Those are officers.
Officers.
2, Officer 3, and Officer 4.
Okay. Now, did. Did he state that Officer One was under his balcony?
He did say that Officer One was located below.
And what did he say he saw Officer One doing?
He saw Officer One shout out commands to the SWAT team to bust down the gate. He heard Officer One say words to the effect of, "I don't care, break the effing gate down so you can get in. I want you in I want you in so the ambulance can get in. While Officer One was shooting, he had a 9mm Glock in one of his hands and was talking in the other. And he does say that the man is below his deck.
With the radio and the Glock in one hand.
Gun in one hand, and from the recording, my recall of that recording is he was talking on the radio with the other one.
And the guy still was at the sliding glass door of his deck. He had gone out onto the side, still inside.
That's what I remember. I can't remember him saying he was on the deck at that point.
How does he know where it was blocked? Did he say familiar with
weapons? He referenced his military background and his familiarization with guns. He visits the range often and shoots different types of weapons and stuff.
But he didn't.
I have a question. So from his vantage point, he can look down at the officer between the cars and the patio door. That officer is firing into the patio, or maybe the patio or the basement.
That's his recollection.
Okay.
I can't.
So the officer that is doing the talking on the radio is below his deck, which is quite a ways from him.
According to his statement, the officer would be in this location somewhere.
He's in five, so.
The officer was below his deck. So.
Right, so he's actually looking at California Navy.
Did he have any statements? Did he have any statements about the officer one, number one, in regard to someone outside telling that person to raise their hands and turn around?
Oh, it may be further in the interview. I'm not done.
Okay, go ahead then.
Continue with the interview. Schuler saw officers 2 through 4 shoot at the direction of the apartment as well. Schuler realized at the time he saw officers 2 and 4. The people he saw outside shooting were police officers. When they broke down the gate, Schuler went back to his couch and turned the television off to listen. Schuler heard Officer 1 had someone outside and told the person to raise their hands and turn around. Schuler assumed the person was handcuffed and taken away. Schuler did not know the length of the time between when he heard the rounds fired and when he heard the commands given by Officer 1 to the person to put their hands up, but estimated it was no more than 10 or 20 minutes. Schuler did not record any of the incident. Schuler knew the man who lived behind where the shots were fired had rounds go into his house. Schuler did not know this man's name and knew he would not speak with law enforcement. Schuler did not call 911. Schuler did not want to get involved. There were spectators outside and the police had to call the apartment maintenance person to direct people to go back inside. The police told residents to go back inside, but they did not listen. Schuler was not interviewed by police. Schuler was interviewed by someone who worked well.
We'll just focus on what he told the agent.
Details of the incident.
Right. And what did he say about his wife and daughter?
His wife and daughter were asleep when the incident began. Schuler's daughter and wife low crawled out of their bedrooms and Schuler instructed them to get into the bathroom. Schuler's wife won't speak to law enforcement. Anyways, he goes on to give her phone number and did not recall his daughter's number. And he goes on to say Officer 1 was right under Schuler's balcony between the sidewalk and a parked vehicle. Officer one stepped beside the parked car. Once the shooting was over and before police had the person out of the apartment, there was a vehicle with red and blue lights on it. This vehicle did not show up until the firing had stopped. Shooter's first thought was someone wanted to shoot the apartment up. Shooter did not have any problems with his hearing or does not have any problems with his hearing or vision. Shooter wore glasses. Shooter was not wearing glasses at the time, but stated this did not impact his ability to see. Shooter talked to his wife and daughter about what he observed. Shooter did not post anything online about what he observed. Shooter had an Instagram account and took a picture of the memorial, which he posted on Instagram. He just saw Breonna Taylor in passing. He didn't socialize with Taylor. Shooter never walked onto his balcony during the incident. Shooter could see Officer 1 from the waist up. Officer 1 was on the sidewalk in front of a parked vehicle when Shooter saw Officer 1.
Any other?
Yes, sir.
Did I hear you say that he saw Officers 2, 3, and 4 firing the weapons?
Yes, sir.
And they're across the parking lot from the apartment. Is that correct?
His statement has got them.
Yes, sir. Across the parking lot. His deck is here, and Breonna Taylor's parked somewhere in this neighborhood.
Her patio.
What's his address? What is his address?
I'm sorry, I can't.
So the first thing he heard while he was watching television in the living room was three quick pops that were gunshots.
Yes, ma'am. Okay.
And that's when he went up and went to the sliding door.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Any other? Okay, moving on to the next neighbor, the gentleman who does not live there, but at that time was at apartment.
Yes, ma'am.
And who is that?
Aaron Sarpe.
Was walking
around
to his car.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. He was interviewed several times.
Yes, ma'am. Right? Yes.
And you interviewed him at one point.
Yes, ma'am, I did.
But prior to your interview, he had been interviewed by who?
Louisville Metro Police Department Sergeant Amanda Seeley. And Sergeant Jason Vance.
So, okay, the first interview with Mr. Sarpe, what date was that?
It was a phone interview that was conducted on March the 21st, 2020, at approximately 0056 hours.
Can you summarize that interview, or that phone interview?
Sure. The conversation was 3 minutes and 1 second length. Mr. Sarpe stated he was about to leave and go home. He picks up his daughter from his brother and mother's residence after he gets off work. Mr. Sarpe stated he walked outside and he was told to go back inside. When he looked out of the window, he could see a lot of police cars and saw them in uniform, so he knew it was police. Mr. Sarpe stated no one identified themselves as police, but he knew they were the police because of their uniforms. He stated he did not hear anyone knocking on the apartment door. Mr. Sarpe agreed to meet with us for a formal interview. And they did a second phone interview, which was on Friday, May the 15th, at approximately 1400 hours, which would be 2 p.m., which lasted 6 minutes and 59 seconds. Mr. Sarpe arrived at the St. Anthony Garden apartment complex on Friday, March 13th, 2020, to pick up his daughter from his mother's apartment. Mr. Sarpe parked his white SUV in the driving lane of the parking lot behind cars parked in the parking spaces in front of. Mr. Sarpe was walking out the door to leave, and he noticed 4 to 5 gentlemen below the apartment stairs. The gentleman ordered him to go back into his apartment. When he went back into his apartment, he heard gunshots, pop, pop, pop. He heard the officers knocking on the door, and they were saying, "This is the cops." Mr. Sarpe then heard a man saying, "It was me. I didn't have anything to do with it." Mr. Sarpe stated he knew they were the police because they had bulletproof vests on, and when he looked at the sliding glass doors, he saw the police cars in the parking lot with blue lights on. Now, you got to realize, Mr. Sarpe, there's kind of a communication barrier. It's kind of hard to understand him because I don't know what nationality he is originally, but he resides here now, and it's very hard to understand him.
Now, then you conducted an interview with Mr. Sarpe.
Yes, ma'am, I did.
And what did he advise you?
That interview was conducted on June the 26th.
What date?
What date did you interview Mr. Sarpe?
June the 26th of this year at 10:59 hours.
Okay, and what did he tell you?
He cares for his 2-year-old daughter and uses a lady that lives above Breonna Taylor's apartment as a babysitter. The lady lives in the apartment with Stanley and his daughter. The lady has been babysitting his daughter for 2 years. He usually drops her off at 1:30 p.m. and arrives to get her about midnight. On March the 12th, 2020, 1:30 p.m., he dropped her off as usual and went to work. A little after midnight, March the 13th, 2020, he arrives at the apartment to get his daughter. He usually parks in the middle of the travel section of the parking lot instead of using a parking space and will go upstairs to get her. He entered the apartment. Stanley was sleeping in his bedroom. Stanley's 7 or 8 year old daughter and the lady were in the living room. He couldn't recall the lady's name at the time of the interview. Sarpe was gathering his daughter's clothes and I believe he said bare, preparing to leave. It usually takes him about 15 minutes to get everything together and leave the apartment with his daughter. He did not see any cop cars or police before entering the apartment. As soon as he opened the door to leave, they started screaming, go back inside. He said, "What's going on? I have to go." They said, "Go back inside." He had to go because his car, a white Toyota Sequoia, was in the middle of the street. They said, "You can't leave right now. Shut the door and go back inside." The cop was telling him this and recognized him because he was in uniform and there was a squad car. He saw flashing lights and did not see any undercover cops. He did not hear any knocking, but did hear gunshots. When he opened the door with his daughter, he saw 4 cops under the stairs against the wall by the lady's apartment door, meaning Brianna's door. They screamed at him to go back inside, the cops were in uniform. The armored police vehicle was in the parking lot and other police cars were coming in the parking lot. Later is when he noticed the undercover vehicles and they had his vehicle blocked in. He went back inside and looked through the sliding glass door and there were blue lights all over the place. He heard the rapid gunfire a few minutes before and then it was quiet. A lady cop came to the apartment he was in and told them to stay inside. There was a lady that got killed in there, meaning the downstairs apartment, is what the lady cop was telling him. Sarpe thought a guy had been shot in the downstairs apartment. There was a blood trail by his car and the police used his car as a shield. gunfire heard by him sounded like a machine gun and someone had went on a shooting spree. He could not give a number of shots fired. He found a shell casing by his car later in the day when he returned to get his vehicle. After the shooting stopped, he saw some undercover cops about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. He did not know Breonna Taylor and has never had a conversation with her or anyone that resided with her. About 6 o'clock in the morning, he took an Uber to go home, leaving his car in the parking lot. He returned about noon to get his car. He recovered the bullet casing from a hardscape area between the parking lot curbing and the sidewalk in front of Breonna Taylor's apartment. He described the casing like an M16 round. When he left at 0600, he noticed the sliding glass door to Breonna's apartment had been shot several times and saw the trail of blood. He did not have any knowledge of the origin of the blood. He described the police uniforms of the officers under the steps as wearing tactical style vest with the word police on the front. He again stated he did not hear any knocking prior to opening the apartment door the first time. He did hear the words police, police. The apartment door was closed when he heard them announcing police, police. He denied arguing with the officers the first time he exited the apartment and saw the officers that told him to go back inside. Once they told him to go back inside, he immediately returned inside the apartment. He estimated about 5 or 10 minutes after going back inside the apartment and then hearing the gunfire. Later on, he learned about a bullet coming from downstairs into Stanley's bedroom, and Stanley was lucky that he was in the room. Stanley was lucky because he was in the room.
So, what did you say about the bullet coming through Stanley's room?
Yes, ma'am. Apparently, one bullet came through into Stanley's bedroom. I believe that's David Stanley.
Which is the son of his babysitter.
Yes, ma'am.
Stanley is. Right. Okay, so that interview you did, then he did hear announcing of police.
Yes, ma'am.
But not no knocking.
Yes, ma'am. He did not hear any knocking.
In the first two interviews, first interview, he didn't hear any knocking. And the second one, he did hear knocking and announcing of police.
Yes, ma'am.
And as you noted, there may be a language barrier.
Yes, ma'am, there is. There was a language barrier, and I believe he got his sequence of events kind of mixed up a little bit, trying to describe the police uniforms. I believe what he was identifying as police uniforms with a tactical vest with police written on the tactical vest.
Is he stating that he heard them say, announce himself as policeman when he's exiting and they're telling him to go back in police? Or is he saying, it's not clear. And that's what, the only reason I want to hear his statement is to hear if they announce themselves at the knock, you know, as they're going into the door. It's not clear. And that's because, because they're born, the language barrier?
No, I asked him the question. He answered that he heard them announce police before opening the door to go outside. So he heard it with a closed door between him and the outside.
And this is every single statement, you interviewed him 3 times, right?
No, I didn't interview him 3 times.
You heard him interview?
I'm sorry?
You said that there was a phone interview first?
Yes, sir. There were 2 phone interviews conducted by a Louisville Metro Police Department sergeant.
There was 2 of those?
Yes.
And you interviewed him once?
Yes, sir. I only interviewed him the 1 time.
And every time he stated that he heard him say police?
Not every time.
Okay.
No. The first time, there was no mention of police.
The first time he didn't hear anybody identify themselves as police. second time he might have, and then when you interviewed him, he said he didn't hear anybody knock.
Yes.
Okay, I guess we're going to conclude. We're going to go off forever now. We're going to conclude for the day.